One of the first questions my patients used to ask me when I said they needed chemo was, am I going to lose my hair? It's the first thing I thought, and when your hair does fall out, there are even more questions. Why does it come back grey and curly? How do I explain to my children that I'm bald? And where can you find a decent wig? Well, today, I'm going to answer all your questions about hair loss with this week's guest, Jasmine Julia Gupta. She's the founder of the charity Cancer Hair Care. This is So Now I've Got Breast Cancer, the podcast for anyone who's just been diagnosed. I'm Dr. Liz O'Riordan, the breast surgeon with breast cancer, and I found out the hard way just how little I knew when I suddenly found myself in the chemo chair. It's why I wrote my book, The Complete Guide to Breast Cancer. There's a lot of bad information out there, and I want to guide you down the right path. So if you've got a question, this show will answer it for you. So I had no idea how attached I was to my hair until it started falling out during chemo. And I remember pulling out big handfuls as I gathered it into a ponytail and my eyes just filled with tears. And we know that some degree of hair loss is inevitable, even with cold capping during chemo, which we'll explain later. And it can feel like your identity is being stripped away. This week's guest, Jasmine Julia Gupta, wants to bridge the gap between the medical and the beauty world. Her incredible charity, Cancer Hair Care, aims to empower people to make choices through their cancer-related hair loss journey. She's a hairdresser and a hair loss expert who consults with the NHS and major charities like Breast Cancer Now, Macmillan, and the Teenage Cancer Trust. And she wrote the first ever Afro Hair Chemotherapy Guide. I had the privilege of meeting her and her dolls several years ago, and I can't think of anyone better to help us understand and feel less scared about losing our hair. Welcome to the show, Jasmine.
Liz, what a lovely wholehearted welcome. Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
Oh, we're so glad to have you. I thought I'd just start with the basics. Can you tell me why you set up Cancer Hair Care in the beginning?
It's a really good question, and it's not the answer that I think people think it is. I haven't had cancer. And I haven't had hair loss. But as a hairdresser, I've always been a bit of a hair nerd, really. But whenever somebody came in to a salon and asked about hair loss, I was always the go-to person. And so the reason I formed Cancer Hair Care was literally, as you said earlier, to bridge that gap. I just knew that people needed independent, trustworthy information and that our lovely nursing staff don't have the time to be hair loss experts. And that cancer and cancer-related treatment has a lot of myths around it. And it's not very empowering for women. So I was reading booklets and guides that were saying things like, you can't colour your new hair growth for 2 years, which, folks, isn't true. But it took me 7 years to get the answer to that question. So that's why I did it.
And we need you so much. Those myths that you mentioned we'll come on to later. I mean, how do you make sure that the information you hear about hair loss is reliable?
One of the things that's really important to me when I founded the charity with, by the way, a fantastic group of women and men. I don't do this on my own. But what we did is we're one of the few charities that started to have a product recommendation policy. What that means is if we as Cancer Hair Care recommend, say, a shampoo or a conditioner, it's gone through a due diligence process so that people can trust it. So we look at everything. Mostly people's concerns are, is there a medical reason why I shouldn't be using a shampoo or conditioner? Most of the time, no, there's not. But they are people's worries. And what shampoo and conditioner? So many product claims. How do you work out what could be beneficial? So we have a multidisciplinary team. We've got our own nurse specialists. We work with oncologists, a dermatologist, trichologist, anything with an ist in it. And a fantastic group of hair loss hairdressers. So the answer to your question is, it's by having a trusted process. Because when we recommend a product, it's not that we're getting 10% of that product. Product companies donate to us, lovely, we make that very clear, but you can't buy our recommendation. That's got to be independent and expert.
That's great to know that there is now a reliable resource that I can send people if they say, can I use a shampoo? Let's get back to the beginning. Jenny asked us, why does chemotherapy make your hair fall out?
Excellent question. So in order to answer that question, we need to think about when hair grows ordinarily. And that word ordinary, what does that mean to the individual? So if you haven't got an underlying hair loss problem and your hair's growing on your head and you blow dry it and wash it, what have you, what happens is underneath the scalp layer, if we're talking about the hair on the scalp, you have on average about 120,000 individual follicles. And if you imagine like a U shape or a bulb, And from there, the hair grows. So it starts under the scalp first, and the blood brings the nutrients and the oxygen and all those systems, and the hair starts to grow underneath the skin layer and then pokes out. That's ordinary growth. And what happens is our hair will continuously grow until it naturally goes through its falling out phase. And this is really important. Before you see that hair on your brush or in the sink, ordinarily, no alarm to be caused. What happens is it goes through what we call a transition phase, where it's just disconnecting and traveling up the follicle until it departs from the scalp. And this is important because hair falls out in different reasons depending on the treatment. So if you're having chemotherapy that causes hair loss, because some cause hair thinning, what happens is immediately when the chemo enters the body, it disrupts temporarily, folks, ordinarily, disrupts this very delicate, quick growing cells. And as a result, it puts that follicle into that temporary falling out cycle. And that's why hair tends to fall out 10 to 14 days after your first chemo. That's gold dust. If anybody's listening and they're starting their journey, 10 to 14 days to go and get your wig, get your headwear. And also, because when we watch a cancer journey on a Netflix or whatever your viewing of choice is, someone has chemo and then within 24 hours, they've always got a beautiful, shiny, clear, silky scalp. It's not like that, folks, is it? We all know that. So with chemo, it falls out because the chemotherapy affects the quickest growing cells, of which hair is one of the second quickest growing cells. But it's a different matter when it comes to radiotherapy, for example.
And I had no idea when your hair fell out. I asked a friend and she said your pubes come out first and then at 2 weeks it's the hair. How did I not know this? But a couple of people have asked, can hair loss from chemotherapy be permanent?
Well, unfortunately, with some chemotherapies, it can be. Now, we talk about that in a particular way and we call it longer term hair loss because for females, it doesn't tend to be the whole head. It tends to be something that replicates something that we call female pattern baldness in our hair loss industry lingo. And that tends to be the very top of the scalp can become very sparse and not grow back properly. Now, if you're listening to this and you're on chemo, that's terrifying to hear that. It isn't particularly common. However, if it's happening to you, it's your everyday, isn't it? It's your everyday. So the best way to find out if the chemotherapy that you're having might cause a long-term effect is to go on to Breast Cancer Now or Macmillan and have a look at the side effects. But folks, there isn't a lot of data on it yet. There isn't a lot of data on it, but it could be a possibility.
Brilliant. Thank you, Jasmine. Now, I want to talk about cold capping. It's not something I did because I had migraines and I wanted to get in and out of the chair as quickly as possible. But does cold capping prevent hair loss during chemotherapy and is it worth trying?
Absolutely, it's worth trying. If you want to have a go at reducing the amount of hair loss, and I'm going to use those words very carefully because it's not a guarantee that all your hair will retain, but it is the only and best way to see if you can retain as much hair as possible. Now, we're asked every day, does it work? That is a very individual situation. For example, you might lose 30% of your hair and say, oh, I'm going to stop cold capping. That's no good for me. Or you might lose 80% of your hair. And yes, folks, you can continue to cold cap if you lose that amount of hair. And that's working for you. That's why it's so individual. Now, that one of the biggest manufacturers in the UK is called Paxman. And they've got an excellent support site. They've got a very, very good website. If you decide that scalp cooling isn't for you, or, you know, you want some independent guidance, we can do that over at Cancer Hair Care and hold your hand throughout it.
Brilliant. And does it make a difference whether you've got afro hair or very fine hair as to how much hair you keep?
So the short answer to that is that depending on your hair texture, it shouldn't be that the outcome will necessarily be better or not. However, if you've got afro or coily hair, the duration, the time that you have that cold cap on needs to be extended. So the thing about cold capping or scalp cooling is it is a treatment in its own right. And so I would recommend anybody to really do a little bit of homework beforehand and really drill down into what do I need to know so I can share that journey with my nurses and say that cold cap's not tight enough. They can't feel it on your head. So it's you've got to really interact.
That's so important, isn't it? Have you got a cold cap there that we could see?
I don't have a cold cap here, unfortunately, we can see, but I have got some things that are really helpful if you are cold capping. So this, folks, isn't something very special. It's just an ordinary cotton head or hairband. Now, what we recommend is if you're cold capping, you pop this on and you wear it as a forehead protector around the forehead underneath your back hairline, because when that cold cap goes on, there's no hair to retain. What we want to do is there's lots of receptors here, so that cold feeling is reduced if you wear that type of band. You know what, people are very creative. I was on the phone to one lady one day and she was in the unit and she said, I haven't got a band. And I said, have you got tights on? She said, yeah. She took her tights off and used that.
Brilliant.
Brilliant. We love a bit of creation. Or your nurses will have some gauze. Ask your nurses for some gauze. And this, folks, is a surgical cap. Now, one of the biggest inquiries about scalp cooling is, if I've lost lots of my hair, can I continue? My nurse is saying no. Well, the folks over at Paxman, who are the biggest manufacturers, give guidance out and they are very clear about it. As long as you protect your scalp, this is called a surgical cap. You just pop this on. If you've got, you know, areas that are totally hair-free, pop this on. So it's covering those balder areas, and then you pop your cold cap on top. And those two things, if you're starting scalp cooling, I would invest in those.
I never knew that. Thank you so much for sharing. It is amazing how technology has changed, hasn't it?
Absolutely.
Some of my followers have asked, when does the hair loss stop? And here's a voice note from Emma.
It's been 6 weeks since my last chemotherapy session, and that was my last one. And although I haven't fully lost my hair, it is still falling out. When can I expect this to stop? And is there anything I can take to help with regrowth, etc.? Thank you.
Lovely question, and really well put and commonly asked. So in answer to that, it takes around 3 months for that follicle to kind of reboot, to stabilise. A lot can be going on under that surface layer. So if we're talking about the hair on our scalp, it may be coming out, but also growing back. So it's a very strange process, because obviously you'd think, I finished my chemo, why is my hair falling out? So number one, nothing's gone wrong. This is a not nice, but normal situation. So within 3 months, it should start to stabilise more, okay? And what can you do? Gosh, it's a really good and big question. So one thing that we're asked a lot about is supplements, because there are many hair, skin and nail supplements, and we've spent a long time debating this. So what we would say is our vast experience that a lot of people feel it's beneficial. We can't get all the nutrients we need mostly from our diets because of our lifestyles. And just so that you know, if you're looking at a hair, skin and nail supplement, that's what we call a very low level supplement. So post-treatment, it's normally absolutely fine to go ahead and take those. If you're having any other kind of medicines, just have a chat with your medical professional. But they ordinarily always say yes to that. And I do think that's one of the elements that can help.
Brilliant. So hair supplements do work. They're worth taking if you want to try and boost the hair growth.
I think they're worth taking as a multi-pronged approach, and folks, eating a good breakfast, especially for women. If your hair follicles could talk to you, they would say, please make a meal out of breakfast, because what happens with our hair is when we have our breakfast, all that nutrients goes to our organs. And us women, we think our hair is an essential organ. Folks, the brain doesn't agree. So the body systems send it there first, especially when you're in recovery. So if you make a meal of breakfast, there's more nutrients to feed the follicle.
So a healthy diet is really key before you're adding in the supplements. I'm going to do that now, a meal for breakfast. I love that. So I wanted to ask about looking after our scalp, because it's not seen the air before. It can get a bit dry, itchy, spotty. Is there anything we can do to look after it during chemo?
Absolutely. There's lots of things you can do. So here's a couple of quick fire tips if you're losing hair due to chemotherapy. So one of the things is get to know your scalp. Is it oily? Is it dry? Is it painful? Because we've known our scalp with hair, and how is it now? Now, it may be just warm water and a flannel is absolutely fine. Or a good tip is anything you use on your face, like a face wash, pop a bit into a basin and use that on your scalp. But often people's scalps are irritable and itchy. Now, what can be great for calming that down is anything with tea tree oil in it. So for example, aloe vera gel with tea tree in, the gel texture is nice and lightweight, so it's not going to make hats and scarves and wigs sticky. And the tea tree has certain qualities in it, and those qualities are said to be antibacterial, antifungal and antiseptic. Antiseptic means it reduces pain levels. So it's an absolutely wonderful and ideal thing to use. So you can go into your kind of local healthcare shops and look for shampoos, face washes, or aloe vera gel with some tea tree oil in it.
That's a brilliant tip. But then Becky got in touch and said she's lost half her hair from brain radiotherapy or CyberKnife, and her scalp is really dry and scaly. Can she use the same kind of thing?
So it's a different situation when you're having radiotherapy directly on the scalp. What you want to look out for is if your medical team have asked you to do anything specific, they've said, please don't wash your scalp, or please use this prescription cream. You do need to stick to that. But often, that's only for a couple of weeks. After that, you can try these things like aloe vera gel with tea tree oil in them, but do a little sensitivity test first. Where you want to do that is on the back of your ear. Often sensitivity tests, we're told to do them in the elbow. Don't do it there. You're going to have loads of needle work done. You're going to get a false reading. So just test it out first.
Brilliant tip. Now, do we need to use sunscreen?
Yes. But in this country, generally speaking, it's said that on the scalp, it's from kind of middle March onwards through to kind of mid-October. That's what our kind of onco-dermatologists say.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have a little bit of a cautionary tale, because a lot of the time chemotherapy can kind of make the skin more primed to being burned. So you just need to be a bit careful, more vulnerable than normal. Now, the test is, if you're wearing a scarf or a bit of headwear, and you put your hand underneath that and you can see your skin through the fabric, you should have some suntan lotion on underneath that. There are some great scalp and head sprays that are handbag size. All the major brands do them, and they're not so oily. So that can be ideal.
Brilliant. And I think a lot of us are very bad at putting on sunscreen all the while. But let's talk about those of us who have lost a hair and don't want people to know: wigs and scarves and turbans. One of our listeners asked for tips on wig shopping. She said yesterday she went to try them on, and although the VAT is taken off, she had no idea how expensive they were. Can you get a wig prescription, and are they means tested?
It's a very good question. So the complicated thing about the NHS referral system is it varies from hospital to hospital. But by and large, you should be able to get a referral to an NHS chosen wig supplier. So folks, there's no such thing as an NHS wig. They don't have a kind of warehouse where they manufacture them. What they do is they outsource them to different local suppliers. Now, it is your supplier's duty to then show you a range which is within the amount specified by the NHS. So it's very common to have to pay a £70 prescription charge. The NHS then tops that up, so to speak. So you kind of need to be armed with that. On our website at Cancer Hair Care, we've broken that down for you, how to plan and what to expect. Now, some listeners might say, oh, that's interesting. My hospital, I didn't have to pay anything. And other listeners will say, oh, well, I was given a list of salons and I had to go and pay in advance. It is a bit of a complicated system.
That's great to know. And is it easy to get hold of wigs for different hair types, like Afro wigs, or I imagine red hair might be quite difficult to get hold of? Do you have to travel the country looking for them?
Sometimes you do. Now, we're trying to change that. At Cancer Hair Care, we're working with NHS suppliers to give them that support, really, and education, because they want to do the best offering. What you need to do is ring in advance and check out what range have they got. So, for example, everybody, this is called a brushed Afro wig. And for people that are listening, not watching, it's got this amazing texture where the hair just kind of floats around in the wind. But this is an Afro hair textured base wig. And everybody of any hair texture should be able to ask for a wig that is the hair texture they want.
So you've got one that's dreaded there and then one that's kind of been combed out in Afro, and they're incredible.
Yeah, exactly. But how do you get them? Well, like you said, if you want a bright red wig and you don't want a fancy dress wig, you want a proper wig with a good lining that will be stable, my best advice is please ring ahead. And if it sounds to you like, I don't think this wig supplier really does a good range of Afro hair wigs, ask them where's their recommendation and let your nurse in charge know the service that you recommended me to didn't actually have the right wig for me.
Brilliant. So stand up, feed everything back to make sure no one else makes the same mistakes. Now, what about people who wear hijabs? Are there things like fringes they can use?
Yeah, there's some fantastic things out there. So if you wear headwear for modest reasons, faith beliefs, etc., How do you make sure that when you're hair free, that headwear doesn't slip? So, for example, lots of big brands and non-brands have bought out a hijab for sports. Now, these are fantastic. When our panel tried and tested these, they said, oh, why didn't I know about these hijabs before? Because they're Gore-Tex. So they're made for when you're sweating. And during chemo, there's often the hot sweats, aren't there, and temperatures rising. But here's the magic. Inside, they've got a little band here. And that helps to keep your hijab on when you're hair-free. These aren't designed for hair-free. They're designed for jogging and sports. So that's why they're good. And the other thing for anybody wearing any type of faith-based headwear, this is called a wig grip.
So that's like a hairband, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like a hairband and it's a velvet texture and it has a cross stitch. And all you do, you might have hair or be hair-free, you pop it on and the texture of that grips a wig or headwear. So if it feels like it's slipping, that will help to keep it on your head. So those are things that can be really great. And you asked me about other things like accessories. So folks, I want to show you these. I'm going to pop on a little bit of headwear. For those people listening, I've just popped on a very basic beanie.
Is it pink or is it coral?
It's a coral. Yeah, you are a hairdresser by heart because, yeah, we would definitely call, we would give that colour a name and it's coral. Folks, if you're listening to this, what I've done is I've just popped on an ordinary piece of headwear that is designed for hair loss. And what that means is it covers all of the hairline area. And I'm holding up these, which are fake fringes. So fake fringes, normally you'd think, well, how would that work? Because they'd clip into my hair. These are designed for hair loss. So they've got sticky Velcro. And all you do is peel off the Velcro and then you pop it up inside your headwear. And what that does is it just gives you a little bit of hair. Look, I'm going to do this with a bit of a low retro-y sweep. So if you've lost your brows, you know, that's covering over where those brows could be.
Wow.
Yeah. And look, it's even a bit squee-whiff, like hair poking out, that annoying bit. So you can see that that is looking really effective. For those of you listening, you need to hop on and look at the video. The difficult thing is getting different textures. So our lovely volunteers will hand make them free of charge in Afro hair textures because you can't get them. We've got a directory on cancer hair care. And on that directory, we've got a list of tried, tested suppliers that do all this specialist stuff. So you can just go on there and look at fringes or hats with hair.
That's amazing. Because wigs can be very hot and sweaty when you're having a hot flush, but knowing you can just put a fringe underneath a beanie and still look like you have hair. The one thing I struggled with was when I tried to tie a scarf, I felt I looked like a cancer patient. And how do you learn to tie a headscarf and look a bit cool and a bit chic? Have you got any tips on that for us?
Absolutely. I think it's about taking your time, putting one of those hotel do not disturb signs on your door and making yourself a nice cup of tea, get some music on, get your getting ready going out music. You might not be going out, but get into that vibe where you kind of get all your stuff out on your bed, you're not going to be interrupted, and have a play around. Now, we work beautifully with lots of different charities, and every 2 weeks we run an online workshop where we talk about techniques for tying scarves and all these ideas. So, you know, come and have a look at the Cancer Hair Care website and join in. You can be anywhere. You can be in your hospital bed, you can be at home, and you can pick up all those valuable tips on how to tie and different things to try.
Brilliant tips there. I just wanted to mention briefly, some of you listening might not want to try wigs. You might want to embrace the bold, and I did. I got some temporary tattoos, some Claire's Accessorize, and I went to have a Turkish head shave in a men's barber shop. Things like henna crowns are now coming into popularity. Are they safe to use?
So we would always say if you do something like a henna crown, do a sensitivity test beforehand. Because whilst hair, it's a bit like colouring hair, whilst henna is a natural ingredient, you can have a heightened sensitivity to it. Just do that patch test behind the ear before you go ahead and put something like a henna tattoo on.
And any tips for shaving your head? Because I wanted to get rid of the stubble, but I'm not used to shaving my scalp and doing the bits of the back where you can't really see or feel.
Well, you'd be delighted to hear that I've just made a video with a lovely hairdresser who has shaved off all her hair to show people how to do it, because there are tips and tricks. Now, first of all, it's a big myth that shaving off hair will cause problematic new hair growth. No, it won't, folks. There's no message when you cut hair with scissors or clippers that is sent to that follicle to say do or don't grow back properly. Really important to say that because people are scared. On our website, we've got a whole guide to clipper cutting. What I would say, the biggest asked question is, when people have clippered down their hair with a guard on, so it's very, very short, and then it goes all patchy, people say, I don't like that look. I want the shiny head. Can I use a bare razor? Here's the things, folks. Yes, you can. What you want to be careful of is what we call hard to heal cuts on the scalp. So if you get a nick or a cut, just do very good wound care. It's quite hard to shave with a razor, but it's a myth that it will cause a problem.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. But I think one of the biggest things a lot of people are scared of is, what will our children think? Mummy comes home, she's suddenly bald. What do you do? Will they want to talk to me? Will they recognise me? And I know this is an area that you've done a lot of work in.
Yeah, talking to young children is something that a lot of women say. I would have never told my kids about cancer, but I'm going to be hair free. You know, I'm not going to have any hair. I've got to have that conversation. How do I speak to a young child? So we've got some fantastic free resources. You talked about the dolls earlier.
Yes,
Liz,
I did.
And these folks are hair loss dolls, and they come in all different shapes and sizes and skin colours. And as you can see, they're hair free one side with lots of lovely little hats. And then the other side, they turn inside out. Voila! Here they are. They've got hair. So
wow.
You can just explain that hair loss journey. So you can have a therapeutic conversation. Say, you know, mummy or auntie or granny's going to, you know, have some time without her hair, and she might be a bit cross about that, and she might have to go, where's my hat? And then hopefully her hair will grow back a little bit, but she's still mummy, like with her different clothes. Her hair's just a bit different for a while. So these are fantastic way of just having that kind of playful interaction. And then we have these, which are cut and make sheets.
And these cards are women of all different skin tones. There was someone there in a wheelchair.
The thing they have in common is that they're all hair free. What you can do with kids is you can colour them in and cut out the headwear, for example. And you can have a therapeutic play situation where you're playing through a conversation about hair loss. Oh, and that's so much easier than having to explain without a visual tool.
They are just incredible. Oh, we can find all of these on your charity website, can't we?
Yeah, just go to information and support, and there's a drop down that says free resources.
I'm going to need the knitting pattern for those dolls, Jasmine. That's
yes,
going to keep me busy.
Liz, we need knitters. Anyone that's listening, we are desperate for knitters. We send out hundreds of these dolls a month. We don't have enough of them. Get in contact if you're a knitter.
Right, that's my winter done. Now I'm going to move on to regrowth, because a lot of people have contacted me about the hair growing back. The one thing we have to talk about is what's known as chemo curls. And it happened to me. Why does the hair come back curly or grey? And Adele asked, her new hair is salt and peppery and wavy instead of her normal dark blonde. Will she get the chemo curls, and what are the best products to use? And then Leslie said, my hair is much thinner and finer than before. What is going on in our scalp follicles?
Great question. Chemo curls is a thing, folks, and it took me about 6 years of research to work this out. So I'm going to give you an answer. Why do we have a curl form? So your natural hair texture before hair loss, whether it's straight or curly or afro, is formed in the upper middle part of the hair follicle. So if your hair is straight, it grows out of like a cylinder, like a penne pasta or a toilet roll. You get straight hair. If it's curly, it's slightly twisted, and therefore you get a coil or a curl. And if it's one of these amazing variants of afro hair, it's very condensed and almost zigzags out. So what we think happens during chemo is sometimes the muscle that's attached to this follicle slightly collapses. And therefore, when your hair starts to grow back through, it can be a different texture or shape or colour. But particularly for people that had straighter hair, the hair can be twisted and come out in a curl or a coil. That's your chemo curl.
I never knew that.
Yes, it's very technical, very nerdy.
And do we know why it always comes back grey?
So it's a good question. And folks, if you're listening, it doesn't always come back grey.
Oh, that's a myth.
It's
Thank
a
you.
Myth. But here's the thing, folks. As a hairdresser, I never argue with anybody about if their hair was grey or not. Because us hairdressers know, we've been mixing in a little bit of stronger colour and colouring those roots. And even if you're colouring your hair yourself, you might not be really crystal clear on what that colour is. So for most women over 40 that are going to have a percentage of grey hair, it will feel like their hair is just grey. However, the pigment, the coloration of the hair can change. It can be different. But most of the time, it's relatively similar to before. It just doesn't feel it because we're not familiar with having all one colour and short hair.
Brilliant. But let's say you do get the grey chemo curls. Is it permanent, or will your hair go back to what it used to be like?
It takes about 9 months for most people to get enough length of hair to see how that colour is going to establish. And lots of people, regardless of texture, say, my hair's a weird colour. I don't know what colour it is. And so it does take a while for it to become familiar in length. And as we get more length, the light changes on our hair. And so we see different tones. So it does take about 9 months. After 9 months, you have a good indication, that's the colour my hair is going to be naturally.
And I guess many women like me have been dyeing their hair for years. So you don't actually know what your normal colour is anymore. It's always like a mousy, horrible brown that you've been avoiding.
But your natural colour is definitely not blue-green.
No, it's not. The blue-green is all me. Now, quite a few people have asked about uneven regrowth, and I've got a few questions here. But first, we've got a voice note from Emma.
Hi there. Just wanted some tips on regrowing hair after chemo. I've got really patchy baby hairs. Do you shave them down again so it comes back evenly? And any more tips for regrowth? Thank you.
Emma, lots of people ask this question. Will shaving my hair back down make it grow back quicker? So technically no, because there's no messaging to the follicle. It takes time for the hair to often thicken up and it's often patchy. So as a hairdresser, we would often just snip down a few bits, maybe make it a bit more even. Very frustrating that the top where the fringe is to the crown is the slowest growing area often, and you get more hair kind of sideburns around the face and the back of the neck. You might want to snip those down so there's just more of a balance.
Brilliant. That's a great tip. And again, Janie asked, I think she's cold capped and she lost a lot of her original hair, but she's got short fuzzy bits. She's got really long original hair left. How long should you wait before having your hair cut? Any tips to help with the fuzzy mess? And I know she's not alone in this.
Absolutely. Fuzzy messes, one thing, or chemo curls that can be really helpful is to get what's called a diffuser attachment for your hairdryer. What they do is they slowly circulate out the air. And what that means is you can just kind of style and manipulate fuzzy, curly hair a little bit more. Whereas if you've got a big blast, it's just fuzzing it all up. So that's one tip. The other thing is to go and chat to a hairdresser about getting a trim, shaping it up. How can you blend it in? And also sometimes using things like coloured hairsprays and things like that can help with texture. A very good product to get in a little bit of conditioner and get a little dab of conditioner, pop it in the palm of your hand, rub it on as if it's a hand cream, and then just stroke that over the fuzzy fluff, let that dry in. And that acts as a little bit of a de-fluffer.
Love that tip. I'm going to try that now on my fluffy hair. Now, we've talked about the grey, and I know the myths that you're not meant to colour your hair for 6 or 9 months because it's baby hair and you'll break it. Is it rubbish?
So there are so many myths around colouring hair. Here's the best guidance we can give. So if you've got around an inch of new hair growth and that hair is stable, it's not falling out, it's stable, your scalp's okay. We're not worried about dandruff or oily scalps. It's not itchy or very, very sore. So inch of new hair growth, scalp's all right, hair is in reasonable condition. It's unlikely to be super duper with just an inch, but not ultra dry. And you do the manufacturer's skin sensitivity test, you're good to go. Avoid bleach, because what bleach does is it goes in and it does somewhat destroy the hair in order to reach that blonde. You can use high lift tint. Try to talk to a knowledgeable hairdresser. We're educating hairdressers vastly. If you're a hairdresser listening or you've got a lovely hairdresser, tell them to go to Cancer Hair Care, do the education piece, because it's the biggest myth. Now, I've coloured hair as a hair loss specialist when it's only about a centimetre long before. So if you're doing it yourself, you probably need to wait for around an inch. But if you're working with a hair loss specialist who's done due diligence and they're using the mildest type of product they can, you're good to go. You must do the sensitivity test, folks. That's an absolute must.
Well, I've learned a lot there, and it's great to know that we don't need to wait that long before we can dye the hair. With regrowth, do Indian and Afro hair need different treatments or different handling?
So regardless of your hair texture, you can kind of cut your hair and colour your hair in the same way across textures. There are certain techniques. For example, people with Afro hair or coily hair might be using relaxers to permanently kind of try to relax the hair. That is a chemical process. So if you have a perm or a relaxer, you want to wait normally until you've got a good 2.5 inches of the hair and it is strong enough. It's vastly different from colouring hair. The chemical process is different. If you're having things like hair extensions and things like that, again, the hair needs to be long enough that it's stable enough to add in those hair extensions. And most hair loss specialists and extension specialists will be able to work with you in an individual way to suss that out.
Brilliant. I guess the thing is, don't try it at home, folks, unless you really know what you're doing.
Absolutely.
Now, we've spoken a lot about the scalps, but let's talk about eyebrows and eyelashes, because this really upset me when they fell out. So I've got a couple of questions here. Michelle wanted to know if your eyebrows and lashes fall out at the same time as your hair. Penny said she finished chemo 9 months ago, and although her eyelashes have come back, her eyebrows haven't. So can you just tell us what happens to your eyebrows and lashes, and what can we expect?
It is a big shock for a lot of people when their lashes and brows go. A lot of men, for example, will say to us, oh my gosh, I'd thought about the hair on my scalp, but not my body hair, facial hair. So when it comes to lashes and brows, the strange thing is you can have lost all the hair on your scalp, but the lashes and brows are still hanging on in there. So folks, that is a strange but normal. Nothing weird has happened. So Liz, people say things to us like, I don't think the chemo is working, it's not getting everywhere. And that's a real worry for people, isn't it? And that's because they say, well, surely I would have lost all my eyebrows. Nothing like that is going on, folks. Nothing like that is going on. But what happens is, if you've got lashes and brows, yes, you can continue to use your mascara or your makeup. Absolutely fine. You're not going to damage them. Now, the strange thing is, the hair on our scalp and our eyebrows and lashes, they're all on different time processes from growing back and how long they stay. So, for example, earlier I was talking about the hair on the head. When it grows, Asian women can grow their hair for up to 7 years and they get waist-length hair. But commonly, women with Caucasian hair, the average growth time is 2.5 years. So if you never get your hair past a jaw length, bob, that's why. So with brows and lashes, they're on a totally different time growth phase. What can happen is when you finish chemo and your hair starts to grow back, sometimes they can start to sort of sprout through and you think, oh, they're coming back, good. And then 6 to 9 months later, they suddenly go thin again. That's because they're not randomized yet. What I mean is, ordinarily, a very small amount of hairs are falling out. The rest are just continuing to grow. But what happens is, when they all start to grow back in unison, they can sometimes start to fall out naturally in unison. And it takes about 18 months for the brows and the lashes to catch up.
Now, there are obviously loads of beauty treatments available for brows and lashes, and it's really hard to know what's the best option, especially when you're going through chemo. And listeners have asked things like, is it okay to pluck your brows to tidy them up? Can you dye your eyelashes? Is it okay to use false ones or to draw on your eyebrows? And what about microblading? Why are people doing it? What is it? And is it safe? Can you tell us a bit more about that?
So microblading, first of all, is a technique. If you hadn't heard of it, folks, it's what we call a semi-permanent makeup technique. And it's a bit like a very light grey tattooing. And I'm going to point to that because we've been doing a lot of work with a lot of the cancer nurses who ask the same question. Now, what we say now is, if you want to have microblading done, because they are using a blade to create a very realistic looking eyebrow, and they have put ink into the skin to do that, it's about the risk. Now, I'm not a medical expert, you are, Liz, and when we have these conversations, what we say is, if you are vulnerable at the time you want to go ahead that done, don't do it. You've got to be well, your skin needs to be in a good condition. And then it should be a viable risk that you take, that if it got infected, and they very rarely do. And I think the future empowerment of this information is us making that bridge and our healthcare experts saying it's a choice. The risks are normally minimal. So I think that's very important. A lot of people have microblading done and they're really glad they had it done.
And should you do it before chemotherapy starts?
In an ideal world, you'd do it before. But the problem that we find is a lot of people don't know about it, or a lot of people having long-term treatment. And do you know what, Liz? We call it the wedding day test. I'll tell you about it. The wedding day test. Here it is. When someone comes and says, can I have, you know, microblading or colouring hair? I'm actually still on treatment. Normally we'd say, not really best advised, but I'm getting married. And everybody, including the nursing team, oncology team, we all go, oh, biggie, okay. Okay, so why is that different? Because what's the difference with the healthcare risk? So we say to people, when you're talking about something somewhat beauty related, say to your lovely medical team, what's the healthcare risk? Now, sometimes our nurses and doctors need to say, I don't know. So we say, if you say no, say it with knowledge. If not, say, I don't know. So best practice, do it before or afterwards. But if you're being treated and you're well, then lots of people do go ahead and have microblading done. And we need to offer that out in a true arena.
And what about false eyelashes and things? I found eyeliner really, really sensitive, but without mascara, I felt I looked like an alien and I just wanted something there. Have you got any tips for that?
Sure. So when it comes to false lashes, as long as you've got no big issue going around the eye area, and folks, it's normal, isn't it, Liz, to often have watery eyes during chemo. So it's fine to use fake lashes. And if you've never used them before, if you buy them a reputable brand from a reputable place, so, you know, you're going into a chemist, for example, or a supermarket, those eyelashes are made with glue, which is very specifically tried and tested for the eye area. So you don't need to get an extra sensitive glue unless you've got a latex allergy and that's obvious. Now, if you've never tried them on before, folks, what happens is they don't go in your eye like a contact lens or anything like that. They go on the outer lid and you put a little glue on and you just stick them on. So on the website, I've made a video. I've got lots of tips. We can recommend brands and things like that. Have a go. But anything like that, if you try a false lash for the first time or anything like that, or a wig for the first time, folks, we recommend try it around the house for 4 hours first. Just get comfortable with it. Have I put enough glue on? Does it feel secure? And therefore, you're not caught out. For example, we've just written a workplace guide. And often people say, oh, I haven't worn my wig and lashes. I'll pop them on to go into the office. Ah, boiling hot. Haven't got a scarf in there. The lash is half on, half off. Ah, what could be a really good situation is a disaster. So just practice is ideal.
Love that. I have learned so much from you, Jasmine. Before I let you go, are there any other online resources for people if they want more information? I know you've got a book, haven't you?
Yeah, so we've written a free downloadable book. So you can go onto the Cancer Hair Care website and download that.
And what's that called?
So this is our Hair and New Hair Growth book, a guide to cancer treatment related hair loss and hair care. And there's lots of tips in there. You know, things like ideal foods to eat, to just try and create a good platform for new hair growth the best we can. So that's available. On the website, which is cancerhaircare.co.uk, we've got an information website, which is regularly updated on every single topic and lots of videos. We also run a phone support service. So you can, our hairdressers, we've got 27 expertly trained hairdressers. They'd love to talk to you about using a diffuser or mousse on your new hair growth. Whatever it is, we can have that long conversation. So I'd say make yourself a cuppa and just have a little bit of a navigation time on that website. Because you know what, Liz, the saddest thing I hear in a day is people say, I wish I'd have known about that doll.
Yeah.
I wish I'd known about that fringe. I wish I'd have known I could carry on cold capping. And when you're a smaller charity, you know, how do you get that voice out there? So I thank you for giving us that voice today.
No, it is so important. I mean, I learned, it was friends who told me about hat extenders that you can put in when your hats are too big for you because you don't have the hair. And it's like the little Velcro things you can get put in. And the fact that we've got you as a resource to help everyone out there who's losing their hair, I just can't thank you enough. So thank you, Jasmine, for sharing your time and knowledge with us today. And we will be back next season to talk about hair thinning on hormone treatments. Thank you.
Liz, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
That was Jasmine Julia Gupta, founder of the incredible charity Cancer Hair Care. Now, you sent me so many questions about hair loss that I've asked Jasmine to come back next season to talk to us about hair thinning on drugs like tamoxifen. And I've got to say a huge thank you to Jasmine for bringing all her props, the dolls, the colouring cards, the afro wigs and fake fringes. If you want to see what they look like, you can watch this episode on my YouTube channel. See the show notes for details. I think the takeaway for me is that everyone deserves proper hair care during chemo, regardless of your hair type. And it's great to know that there are wigs and fringes available for everyone. And also, it's safe to colour your hair when it's just a few centimetres long. I thought you had to wait 6 months. That's why we should always listen to the experts. And now it's time for the wonderful Donna Ashworth, our podcast poet, to read us her poem of the week from her best-selling book, Wild Hope. Over to Donna.
Time can't erase your beauty. Aging looks good on anyone who believes that it does. It's an inner light kind of deal. It shines through skin, bone, muscle and sinew, bathing everything you see in a luminous glow of peace, acceptance and utter loveliness. It's some sort of chemical reaction when self-love, at last, meets Mother Nature. Then wisdom and hindsight all join together and cast their magic until what you see is a woman who has evolved, grown, learned and risen many, many times. And it's a beautiful sight to behold. Time cannot erase your beauty, my friend. Only negativity can do that.
That was Donna Ashworth reading Time Can't Erase Your Beauty from her book Wild Hope. And I think that's a really important lesson for us all. Cancer doesn't take away who we are deep inside. Now, if you want to read more of Donna's poems, find out about today's guest, Jasmine Julia Gupta, and the Cancer Hair Care Charity, or just send me a question to answer on the show. You'll find all the details in the show notes. And if you love this episode and have a few moments to spare, please leave us a rating or review wherever you listen. And you can now sign up to my monthly podcast newsletter for my bonus tips. Next week is a special episode aimed at parents. We're going to be talking about how to tell your children you have cancer with the incredible Caroline Leake from Fruit Fly Collective.
Maybe the three-year-old plays with dinosaurs, so Stegosaurus, Tyrannosaurus Rex. They're long, complicated words, but they get them, they use them all the time, so actually, why not leukemia or whatever? Because it's not scary, it's not a loaded word for them. So using the word cancer is a great start.
I'm Dr. Liz O'Riordan. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you then. So Now I've Got Breast Cancer is produced by Birdline Media.